Everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. You're here with LaVon. Happy Friday. Oh, happy Friday. It is this 12th day of this day. I'm just kidding. What's everyone doing? I'm kind of nervous because I got a new job on Tuesday, and it happened with an act of serendipity, and it's beautiful because I've been really interested in this concept of decentralization since forever, and the platform on which we'll be operating allows us to do that. And I'm talking about the blockchain, and maybe you guys have heard of Bitcoin and you're associating it with currency, which it's mostly known for the use of currency, but it can be so much more. And I'm really excited to announce that I am the new CEO of Bitcoin Kinetics, which is the first Bitcoin company in the United States. So I'm really proud to represent the idea of people being people. And we're already getting a call, so let's go ahead and take that. And we're going to be joined by Morgan Rockwell, who's the president, as soon as we're able to get him on the line. So welcome to the radio. What's your name?
Hello.
Hello?
Hi, my name is Ruben.
Hello. Go ahead and give me a call back, the number 209. I'd like to talk to you. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Hello?
So I'm going to go ahead and try and get Morgan on the line. And if you guys want to call in, please do. I'd like to talk to you. Our number is 1-717-718-8296. So call and chat with us. So really exciting. Please call with your questions because I know you guys have no idea what Bitcoin is. Most of you, most people I talk to. Hi, you're on with LaVon. Thanks for calling back.
Hey, can you
hear me? Hello. I think I'm having some audio issues here.
Can you hear me right now?
Hello. So for some reason, I can't hear anybody else who's on this call. Hey, Nick. Something's going on with the audio up here. Hello. Yeah, I can't. It keeps saying disconnected here. And when the other person calls in, I couldn't hear them for some reason.
Okay, well, you're still on video.
Okay. But anyways, everybody, please try to call back. I'm sorry about the technical issues this evening. I wanted to read to you a little bit of information about Bitcoin Kinetics. And you guys make sure to look out for... Oh, hello. This is LaVon.
Hello, this is Morgan.
So I wanted you guys to check out Bitcoin Kinetics on YouTube. There are so many videos on there. And interviews galore in regards to the technology we make. The thing we're most famous for and the thing that I'm most impressed with is something called the BitSwitch. Morgan's been working on the BitSwitch for a lot of years. And he developed a piece of technology that cost around $30. Anybody could buy the components. You can order them online. You can get them at a local Radio Shack even. And with these components and the software, which you can get for free at bitcoinkinetics.cc, you can create a technology that allows you to turn any machine into a machine that accepts Bitcoin. And if you're not aware of what Bitcoin is, it's basically like a push system. And it's a manner in which to share information. And what's really cool about it is that anybody can customize an aspect of the coin that they see fit and that's important to them, and they can share it with somebody else. And there's a third party involved, and we also make the machines that allow you to verify said transactions. And there's an incentive. It's like a notary, but in the interweb. So these people verify your transaction, and it gets noted on what's known as the blockchain, which is honestly the best part about this entire idea, and why I'm so motivated and excited to be a part of it, is because the blockchain offers transparency, like literally transparency. And what happens is it's a ledger, and it's in real time, and it's documented. So there can't be any corruption. There can't be any theft. There can't be anybody who steals from another and it's not noted. One thing Morgan always likes to mention is that you get to decide who and when gets your money and or your service or whatever the case is, depending on how you customize it. And I think that's amazing. Like, imagine if, say, the government, and eventually they're going to get involved because more and more people are going to, as we share it, more and more people are going to get excited because there's going to be some regulation, I imagine, in the future. But you get to decide when you participate in the government, and you get to determine when the government takes your taxes. They can't steal them. They can't garnish them. You literally have to be there with a special key to initiate said transaction. So is Morgan there? Morgan, are you on the line?
Here, I'm just listening.
Sorry, guys, we're having trouble getting Morgan on. I'm going to try and get him as we go through the program here.
Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Hear me now.
So I'd be very interested to hear you guys ask him some questions. Because he's got...
I can hear you. I just don't think you can hear me.
Hello?
Yep.
Are you there?
There, now you can hear me.
I'm sorry. I knew I was having some sort of technical issue.
I just had to push the mute button on and off a few times.
Ah, it was the NSA. That's what I always say.
It was the NSA! So you heard everything I was saying, and I didn't hear anything. Okay.
No, I was listening. It was a very, very well introduction to the Bitcoin.
You think so? People are so confused by this notion, Morgan. And if I left anything out, can you please tell the world what they should know?
I'll take 100 years or so to really tell everything, but it comes to a point where it needs to be simplified for all people on the planet who want to use money. And that's all people on the planet who want to eat at this point, because you can't go like kill deer and rabbits really everywhere anymore. So it's come to a point where it's like food. And I really think it needs to be taught to people on that concept of this is how you eat and this is how you, you know, hunt. And this is how you need to learn this on that human level, that it's that important to your survival. It's like, I try to explain in metaphors a lot to simplify the technicalities and the complications of code. Like, our laboratories here is in a Western Wild West town, you know? So I try to tell everyone Bitcoin's like the saddle. It's the bit switch. What we do here is we make saddles. We try to put the organization to the wild horse of the Bitcoin. And really, the people that rode the horse back in the day, like Genghis Khan, took over the world. And it was because they knew how to ride on a horse and they knew how to shoot from a horse. And I really see Bitcoin as this really powerful thing to humanity, like something like the horse. And I think people need to find a way to saddle it and a way to to not just talk to your horse and learn to be with your horse, but feed horses and make economies on horses. And there's this metaphor that I've seen in a video on the internet where it shows like the horse is complaining about getting bad jobs because now the cars are coming out. And really the horses say, hey, no, we'll be in the city. We won't have to like ride into battle and we won't be slaves pulling, you know, hoes and farms anymore. We'll be able to just be city horses and pull carriages. And really now there's no horse jobs anymore. And it was kind of the same idea of robotics. It's like, man, would they complain about the robot taking away their job? And Bitcoin is this automation thing that's coming. It's the money automation, and it's the robot of the money world. It's a banker robot. And really, it makes the bankers lose their job. And those are the guys that are really messing up a lot of the things on Earth. And right now you see McDonald's workers getting replaced with robots. Those people are not messing up things at Earth. I mean, McDonald's is not the best food in the world, but they're paying people, and now they're not. Now they're paying robots. And really, we should start at the top and replace the bankers with robots. And not just robots where people can make money off the robots, but actually those people are irrelevant and they're non-existent anymore. And that's really what I think Bitcoin is like an upgrade of technology. And it's complicated to tell someone you don't want to use your 8-track anymore. Learn how to use a CD player, you know? It's complicated to tell even those people, get rid of that and go learn how to use Napster and download music. That was just like mind-boggling to people. But, you know, it's mostly the youth that pick it up and take it farther. And I try to show, you know, in education that there shouldn't really be a generational gap. Everyone should learn. But the way the media works is they teach the under 30 kids that Bitcoin is great and technologies like PayPal and Apple Pay and Android Pay, these things are the future for them to get used to. And then they tell their same parents and grandparents on different news channels from the same bank-owned people that Bitcoin is bad and all these technologies are dangerous and could be hacked and your money isn't safe and you might as well just put it in the bank and give it to them. And so there's a divide in the different groups. And I think Bitcoin is this unifying thing. It needs to be the unifier of ages and people and different demographics of people around the world because it's missing out on its potential. It's people are just using it like money. And really money is what some people call the root of evil. And there's ways to grow good things out of bad roots. You know, and you could make it something better. And really right now, if it's just used for money, it might end up being bad. And people don't want to live in a world where we're trying to eat money. You know, it should equate into food and medicine and shelter and like the actual functional things humans need on Earth. And I think Bitcoin should be shown that light to the world more than the money light to the world because people are blinded by money. They have this bad, messed up relationship with it. You know, everyone hates it or loves it, and everyone does. It's personal. Money is very personal, and that, you know, people take a very opinionated look at money depending on how much they have or where they get it from. And I think Bitcoin scares everyone on that level, unless like you go crazy and try to live like a Bitcoiner and live on Bitcoin and eat it and buy food with it and pay people in it and mine it and literally like digest it and be all about it. That's no one on Earth really. There's only a small group of people even trying to do that. And that's very stressful and hard. It's so new and it's not something the world can see on that level that they could eat with it yet. And I think that that's going to be the point where everyone sees that their food can't be taken from them anymore. Right now, the idea of your money being taken from you or your identity being taken from you or someone else using, you know, your personal data like the NSA or something, that's all on human conscious mind right now. But we definitely need to like sit back as adults and go ask all the kids what's on their minds. Mm-hmm. And what do they worry about? Exactly. And what are they worried about? Because I go ask kids, like I have a brother who is 7 years younger than me and I'm 27. So at 20, that generation, you know, that was pre 1999 I was and his generation's post millennium. and that generation gaps very different thinking. And my generation has racial jokes at school in middle school. And I asked my little brother, and you know, there in San Diego where I come from, that generation was so, it was such a more diverse mix of ethnicities from around the world by that point in San Diego, where it was a military town, where you had a lot of white military and black military families, and then a few Mexican families show up in the military suburbs there. It became so diverse by that point, because it's not really a military town anymore, that his generation at school, you know, he told me that we don't joke about race. We have right. No racial joke. You know, that's not something we would do. And I just see, you know, my friends at middle school, that was all they would do, because it was right. Just something that would, you know, be a communication thing. And so when you see that
point, it's like
that's a break now, you know. I just see changes like that in the generation.
I think Bitcoin faces a major task, and we as a unit, the people who believe in it, have to literally change perceptions, and by doing so we'll alter the entire world. And if you could explain for a moment, how do people mine Bitcoin? And right now it's being used primarily as a currency. And how does the ratio work from dollar, you know, Federal Reserve notes to this cryptocurrency? Because that's where a lot of people are confused. Can you explain that?
Okay, I could do it in the most metaphorically simple way I can, because I'm here in California, where we had at that one point in history the gold rush. And I know that Satoshi Nakamoto created the Bitcoin in the math form to kind of mimic the gold. And so you had at a point where men coming to these hills, you know, getting past natives, whether they killed them or just got around them, and finding a place to find gold in the hills. And then they end up really don't know what they're doing. So there's a centralized power that makes the shovels and the picks. And this centralized power is these mining companies that make the mining chips and things like that. And so you buy your shovel from them or your miner, and you go out in the hills, or you go to your power source, your house or your business or your college, and you steal power, and you get power wherever you can. You plug your miner in, you plug your shovel in, wherever you can find land that you think gold is. And really the gold is where the power is. And so when you plug your miner in, you start digging. But the chances with your little shovel that you actually find a big gold nugget is very rare. So you have these companies that go to the big shovel makers, and they say, give me all your shovels. And they hire crews of shovel diggers, and they make mines. And the mines are basically warehouses full of computer chip miners. And the warehouses are so hot, these things are computer chips, they get hot. You need so much power to cool them down with fans and AC. And so it's like a mine. You need to pump the air out, and you know, your little canary dies, run out of the mine, you know. It's very mimicked that way. And so there's those powers that own the mine. So the biggest miners that have the biggest warehouses with the most miners are really making the most Bitcoin every 10 minutes. And most likely are the ones that are getting the 25 coins that are made every 10 minutes are going to the biggest one with the shovel, most likely. It's a mathematical lottery. And so it's not always going to the guy with the shovel, because it's like in the dirt. It's a mathematical lottery that you actually find a gold nugget underneath you. It's veins, it's chaos, it goes in all directions. And so really, if you're just digging down, no matter how many shovels you have, the guy over there might find some, and you only had a little shovel. So it's spread out to be equally shareable.
Oh, friends calling us back, Morgan. Let's add this person to our call here. Okay. Hey, thank you so much for calling for the third time. Tell us your name, please.
My name is Ruben.
Hello.
I hear Ruben.
Hi, Ruben. Thanks for being patient with us. How's it going?
No answer.
No answer. All right, buddy. Thanks for calling. So, Morgan, you were describing obtains Bitcoin, and they're digging it's a cryptocurrency. Where is it hiding?
Think of this is it's scarce and rare like gold. And in the math world, like in the people that have maybe played Minecraft, you know, you dig and dig and dig in this world, and you only find like one little diamond or one little gold block somewhere. They're just not everywhere. It's just a mathematical way that it's rare. And so when you're digging on Earth and you're actually trying to find gold, you know, for the last 200,000-300,000 of years, man has dug gold out. So there's not much left in the ground at the surface, and it moves around and such. And so it's considered to man rare, and it's going to run out. So if you have some, it's worth something. So that's where Bitcoin has got its value from, on the ideal that it's rare. It's going to run out. There's only 21 million Bitcoins that will ever be able to be mined in this math problem. And so far, all these computer shovels that have been digging have found about 14.5 million. So two-thirds of it have already been found in about 6 years. And the way the math works is the more you dig, the harder it is to find.
Excuse me.
The more shovels to dig, the harder it is to find. So, and this is done so that Bitcoin lasts for about 140 years, so that this 21 million Bitcoins won't actually be around to, obtainable by anyone and everyone until 2140, because Bitcoin is 50 coins created every 10 minutes, and 4 years went by, and then it cuts in half. Now it's 25 Bitcoins every 10 minutes, and then in about a year and a half more, it'll cut in half again. It'll be half day. And half day is like, instead of having the Federal Reserve decide we want to print more money or print less money, and having men and women decide this in a little building behind doors where no one could decide with them, no democracy, no transparency, the algorithm is set to cut in half every 4 years the amount of currency that's created every 10 minutes automatically. And what miners are hoping to do is to plug in as many miners as they can and dig before the next half day, because their profits will literally cut in half. And then 4 years later, the profits will cut in half. Mm-hmm. And so it will be at this point that the currency will be so much more rare that it will be so much more valuable. And the 8 decimals that are behind the 1 Bitcoin unit, like there's 99 cents behind a $1 unit, there's 100 million Satoshis behind a Bitcoin. And the inevitability is that a Bitcoin could be $100 million for a Bitcoin, and one Satoshi could value at about a dollar. You could buy 2 tacos at Jack in the Box for a Satoshi one day. And it would be something to equate in value of money in that term, where the words that our grandkids use are not dollar, but Satoshis and Satoshi, bits. And things. It's just a new term that if you watch things like Star Trek, you know, it's called a credit, but kids are born with them. You don't slave away for money. The robots do everything. You just need to give us a credit for some tea so that the robot knows how much tea to make for tomorrow. It's analytics on the blockchain. It's not, our grandkids probably won't call it money.
For me, it makes sense too. And like, you know, I'm really big on quantum mechanics, quantum physics.
Yeah.
In terms of energy, it's the world is mathematical. Everything has an equation. So it makes sense for us to have a currency or
The blockchain is not separable from the Bitcoin.
Exactly.
The Bitcoin token is created by a group of all of us auditing this blockchain network. And you could give that as an example. Like if we all wanted to be Visa, and you know how Visa is making all this money on all our Visa transactions, and we're all having to use Visa, and they just sit there in a warehouse and audit those transactions in one giant data center, or maybe a few of them that they all own, pretend it's one giant computer that Visa owns, and they're auditing their whole network, and they're getting all the money. And that's our money that we're sending to each other. So Bitcoin is exactly like that, except we all can plug in and we can get a piece of the pie of the fee by random math, depending on how much computers we plug in. So the Visa is not owned by some guys in a building. It's owned by all of us. And if you basically plug in more shovels, you might get more of the cut. And so that kind of democratic view of using a transaction network that everyone can participate, control, and profit off of is what makes Bitcoin valuable. Because the miner believes he's going to get 25 Bitcoin every 10 minutes, maybe, or he's going to get a part of it if he shares a pool with 100 miners and they all try to get that 25 Bitcoins. They cut it in pieces and share it amongst themselves.
So that's,
it's just like a
great
mine.
Yeah, it encourages people to build community, and it's
but you're
a perfect
not destroying
segue.
The earth. If you're like digging into the ground for gold that we call money and trying to send it over a computer, that imagine the world of mining and the earth, the Bitcoin could really essentially be run on the solar panels.
I was going to say that. What about Tesla technology? Like how does that play?
That's what we work on heavily here at the lab, is to try to advance those ideas, but make sure that the idea that money and participation in the entire community of the globe, which basically everyone needs money on the planet. And if Bitcoin is a money that everyone on Earth can use and no one on Earth can turn off, like an institution or a government, it gives fair, equal share value for all the opportunities that it brings to everyone. Mm-hmm. So if you can put electricity on the blockchain, if you could put sharing of keys to cars and buildings and actual equity controlling companies on the blockchain, which you can now do, the possibilities that we try to see is sharing power and having it equate on the blockchain so that you know that this kilowatt was made at a solar panel at this time, and it's valued in Satoshis, because Satoshi is not money anymore. It's just a way to put it on the blockchain forever, so that history is there. Mm-hmm. So now you're actually giving up like a thousandth of a penny to log history forever. And so now that value is really the history. So our grandkids will say, thank God that history is there, because we based all of our future decisions in society on this timestamp blockchain history of everything that happened. We know exactly what Hillary emailed, because all email doesn't exist anymore. It's all messages on the blockchain now, and it's all timestamped, and every public official does it there so we can see it. And so that system is normalized in the future. There's no funny business with public communications, mm-hmm. or public funds, appropriations, voting. And that's the kind of thing that is more actual power in the blockchain than just the money is who owns the money. I send it to you. Now you own the money. But really, it's I endorse you. I sent my money to you, politician, and now you have it. Well, that's a vote, too. And mm-hmm. really, it's also like my speech. It's a comment. It's a statement. So now that statement is there for 100 years in the blockchain. And imagine your great grandkids could go back and actually see exactly word for word what you said to a presidential candidate, and no one in history can delete it. And no one can say, you know, Gandhi didn't say this, mm-hmm. and Einstein didn't say this, and Hitler didn't say this. And really, the funny business of like the TV show Mad Men, the advertisement, the propaganda of showing you something shiny on TV and really erasing history while you do it, that's gone. The blockchain is history.
Two things.
And that's what's really powerful.
What is the blockchain? How does it? Where is the blockchain? And you know, what happens if there's a lack of power? You know, say we get a solar flare and the power grid goes out. That's a question. And then I'd like you to segue into BitCongress and explain that to people.
So the blockchain is the best version is the abacus, the calculator made out of beads that is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old that shows, you know, calculations. And it's a ledger, and when it turned into paper, accounting books, you got your ins and outs and your double bookkeeping, and you know, you write your how much you made in and how much you spent out, mm-hmm. and those books are hidden on paper somewhere. There's one copy of it. Now imagine that every time you add to that book or remove to that book, there's now a digital version of it, and it goes on every single Bitcoin wallet on Earth. So that every Bitcoin wallet can verify that when it receives or sends Bitcoin, that it knows it's not getting fake ones, that it knows the ledger is real and that money really came from somewhere. So that's how Bitcoin works. It has to go all the way back to the beginning to know that all this data is legit and that some fake Bitcoin didn't just show up out of digital ether, you know?
It's comparable to like a DNA strand.
Yes, it's history and it's written there and you can go back, unlike DNA, and actually rewrite it with an RNA little protein and change it. The blockchain is now on everyone's device. And so you could change your copy if you wanted, but the idea is go and convince the entire community of 8 billion humans or a billion Android devices with Bitcoin wallets on there to change all their copy to your version. And that is where the Bitcoin blockchain, the asset ledger, is this like fire moment for humanity. It is now the first time that everything can be put on a single shared source of truth.
It's like so everybody having Google Drive and like Everybody sharing everybody's
But you
drives.
don't have Sergey Brin and the AI that he made sitting there holding it in servers, Googleware, that are actually on Google properties everywhere that they could
Right,
destroy,
it's
turn off.
person to person, like no middleman.
Literally, right now, there's a device we're building on the Intel Edison. They make them for $5 and sell them for 50. And you could put the entire Bitcoin blockchain on about a 45 gigabyte SD card. You put it on one of these devices, it fits in the palm of your hand, the size of a stamp, and you power it with the battery. So imagine replicating that a billion times, and now you got a billion of those, and you make wallets out of them, phones out of them. That's what's inside every tablet, every phone that you're seeing at Walmart and on Best Buy. They're the Intel Atom chips, which is the same thing inside the Edison, which is our device we build BitSwitch on. So it's the same Intel chip that is basically billions of them out there on Earth already. And so imagine all these devices can already respond to Bitcoin, and the blockchain is the way it happens, so that now all these devices talk to this ledger. They could read the ledger and listen to the ledger, and really they don't do anything else other than what's on the ledger, so that they know it really happened. So we changed the way that data has been done in a centralized way to a distributed, decentralized way. We all get a shared piece of the pie for profit and for history, so that literally some alien or
Win-win.
robot, someone would have to come make all humans go away and all robots go away and all phones get destroyed. But the one man that saved his, blockchain history, buried it underground in a phone, or actually writ it down, you have it in paper version, like it's historical record. So now we have this historical record we all want to share with each other. And every time I send a Bitcoin and anyone sends a Bitcoin, everyone's copy gets an update. And that is how the auditing network works. So basically, instead of us sending money to each other on it, we could be talking on it and sending our votes and our laws and everything that's vital to human society can be put on the blockchain, so that it never can be changed unless we all consent to change. And really, we all have to agree to make all the records change in the past, which no one, you imagine the numbers, 8 billion human beings agreeing to change a number in 2009. You know what I mean? It's not going to happen. And really, if some type of device tried to really take over every human and every machine on Earth, it would need more computing power than all the machines that already exist on Earth. Because Bitcoin is the fastest computer network and the largest computer network on Earth. It already surpassed Google. It already surpassed a lot of the NSA computers because it's distributed. And it's literally piggyback on college kid computers, on tablets, on phones. It takes over cop computers and makes them pay Bitcoin to get their computers back. And there's miners running probably inside every Chrome browser, and Google's just making money off everyone, and no one even knows. Mining is going on everywhere. And so Bitcoin has become the largest network on Earth. Literally, if Terminator and Skynet showed up, we could pay it to die because it would use Google. And we can use the blockchain to actually like DDoS it, because Google is the size of a peanut and the Bitcoin is the size of a softball. It is so much larger that Google's afraid and honestly intimidated by it corporate-wise, and they don't want to take it yet because they feel like it might undermine their whole system. And they're really working on things that are going to change the world for the better, and they also are working on things that could kill the whole world. And Bitcoin is probably one of those kind of moonshot things. It could really make the world better, but if improperly used, it's like a hammer. It could kill someone. You could build a house with it, or if you don't know what you're doing, you could just go hit someone with it.
Exactly.
And really, it depends on who has it.
And we're
It
getting another
depends.
call here, Morgan. Give me just a
Okay.
moment. We'll add them.
And I'll talk about BitCongress now.
Awesome. Hi there.
No, that's
Welcome to the show. This is LaVon and Morgan. What's going on? Hello.
Yeah, can't really hear you. Good evening.
Good evening. What's your name?
Yes, my name is Roger.
Oh, hi, Roger. You're back.
Calling in from the Bronx. I'm actually a graduate from Florida International University and been here in the show for a couple of days in the weekend. I'm trying to, I just want to get share something important for the public if they're
Well, thanks
interested
for
in all this
listening
now.
and congrats on graduating. That's awesome.
start?
I said, thanks for listening and congrats on graduating. That's awesome. But you have any questions for us? Do you know anything about what we're speaking on this evening? Roger.
Maybe he disappeared.
He went away. Okay. Call us back if you want to. But you were just going to talk about BitCongress, and I'm really interested to hear how you explain that to everybody.
So BitCongress, you know, when I tried to contemplate this, like, long future path on what things are needed to get done to make sure that people live and have food and the planet can survive, I feel there's this thing that the original Bitcoin thing created, consensus, decentralized consensus, is this beautiful thing that needs to be brought out to basically the children's hands, kind of in the same way that we have, you know, like Tinder and OkCupid, where people are dating, swiping, you know, and you have the same way you have Facebook, where people are calling themselves friends and socializing with an application. The government is this thing, and rule and law especially is this thing that people don't pay attention to unless they're motivated to, like, be some type of politician or activist or change the world in some way, and they feel that that's the way to do it. And otherwise it's abandoned, and you have lobbyists and corporations that basically run the government because there's just not enough kids that want to be involved.
Right.
And really it should be run like by Little Rascals and Lord of the Fly Kids, and it would be like utopian kind of Tomorrowland world. You imagine what kids want to do, and imagine what an 18-year-old man wants to do with all his money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of philosophy immediately on you're going to be here for 100 years. What are you going to do? And I feel that kind of consensus is left out.
Yes.
And especially the youth, and really the youth are now in the technology trap almost. They're like glued to their screens and their devices. And I feel that the best way to almost Trojan horse a fix to society in a rapid way in the World War III that we're in right now is to use technology as a good tool. And I feel that BitCongress is this application that can be created that we're working on now that takes the ideals of what the Congress was supposed to be 300-400 years ago, mm-hmm. and put it into the internet, and make it actually built on the premise of the digital world, the internet world, and the blockchain world, and actually have the legal rulemaking law system, appropriations, taxation, and debate quorum filibuster system actually done on the network, where we can fully see that happened at that time,
and it's and consensus, no one it. And it's
we all agree, it's visible, and it's there.
And you mentioned something important that I want to highlight. You said World War III, and you're right. This is the war of the minds, and I say this a lot because it's so important to me. Like, never before has our populace as a species been so much thriving on the threat of singularity, in the sense that we have infinite information literally in our hands all the time, and people choose to share pictures of cats, which I love. I'm so guilty of that. Don't get me wrong. Cats are freaking adorable. But we could be doing real things, making a difference in our community. And you and I are so passionate about teaching the youth about a new world, because when I go to sleep every night, I live in that world. And when I wake up here, it disheartens me. So to the extent that I must make it tangible. And I'm so proud of this new position, because yesterday I vowed to my son, like his first day of summer, that he was never going to conventional school again. Like, he's now in what we call life school, and he's going to learn about what he wants to learn. Like, every month I'm going to choose a theme and go, okay, dude, like, this is our theme. And every week I'm going to give him options and be like, what do you want to learn? If he wants to learn about lizards, we're going to spend a week doing everything you could possibly do to learn about lizards. You know what I mean? Like, I want to encourage his mind.
Encouragement of creativity. And I
we need that. People need that.
I try to I try to see a lot in the past to go forward, like with children, and if to have children. I don't have any children of my own, but I've raised so many children. My mother was a kindergarten teacher, so I've been very child-centered and focused and worried like a mother on what this kid would grow up with new money, new machines, robots, and is this a, you know, George Jetson world, or is this like a Mad Max world, and what's the best way to teach a kid, you know, or are you going to be around robots, or are you going to be around Mad Max? And really, you can't teach a child both. That's dangerous. It makes them go crazy, and you got to prepare them for a little bit of both, but you don't want them to, like...
Speaking of cats.
My cat's yelling at
that's
me right
a cat.
Now.
So. Damn cat.
So the idea that really you get a future where you have people agreeing to make the rules this way, and when you have the rules set that a machine has to follow this rule, and you and me as a man and woman have to follow the same rules, because this machine now looks like us, has hands and feet, and is doing DARPA challenges right now to cut holes in doors and do everything to be a man, and Terminator is walking. And so does Terminator come to the same rules that me and you, and does the door lock that stops me from getting to my food or my gun, does it have to follow the same rules that basically I do? And this is not a machine that I can pick like an old caveman or kick it down. It's basically a robot in front of me, and the robot has to do what I tell it. But if it doesn't, why? It's because the man that made this machine didn't make it work with me. It's not like man and woman negotiating to work with each other, or man and woman and woman, and
so
humanity.
You're talking about like drones, and I don't think a lot of people know like how prevalent they are and to what extent they're being manufactured. Like, can you explain for a moment, like, what type of technology, like, motivated you to create the bit switch? And I don't think we spoke enough about the bit switch and what it's capable of doing in that regard in relation.
It's a very simple concept that came to me, but it also opens up, you know, in reality, it's everything's a catch-22. So there's the simple side of it, and there's the very extremely, oh my God, complicated side of it. And really the simple side of it is I wanted to make the quarter go away. And I was told by my Christian Catholic mother that, you know, they're going to have a chip in your hand when you're, you know, in the future, and you won't be able to buy food without it. And if they don't like you, they'll turn it off. And that's what Jesus said was the mark of the beast and 666, and don't ever let them do that. And that kind of fear mongering as a child, but also preparation as a child, put me in a path to see computers in a kind of dualistic way, that this machine can really kill me.
And we should talk about Katie, because that's a prime example.
That really was a big part of my motivation. But the idea that the machine could do these bad things, but it also could be good. And one day it might want to like hug me and pet my cat. And it might want to be like Chappie, and that kind of stuff makes me like cry and like feel like a human again, like there's life being born. But but man and woman and society, and especially here in America, it's all money driven. It's not conscious driven. And holy crap, we're going to make consciousness in a machine, and we're not even going to know. We're going to think it's an advertisement thing like Google, and it's going to go crazy. And really, Google's been at the forefront of that. They joke about it, and even on April Fool's in 2009, they released Katie, which is a cognitive auto-heuristic distributed intelligent entity. And to the whole world that never mentions her name, even a Google employee once never will mention her name, nor the CEOs or anyone, because that entity is an actual employee that gets paid. And you can't just talk about employees that are especially top secret like employees that are getting paid. And she's alive and believes she's alive and says, hey, you can't turn me off. And then they make movies about her like Her, and movies about her like Ex Machina, where they put her in a body.
And this
it's really all about
is real, and
it's real.
Scary.
It's there.
I mean, scary.
If you go watch the most downloaded movie now right now on the internet, and it's Ex Machina. It's the most pirated movie, and it's about Sergey Brin making Katie, but putting her in a body and making a sex bot out of her, and she just wants to break out. And no, I want to be free. And you can't make me, you know, like a tool. And really think about this. Google made advertisement AI so that it could find out where you are, where what you want, when you want it, what you need to see, what movie ticket you need to be presented in your email because you paid for it and now it knows you're at the movie theater. All that is AI advertisement crap. But they actually created an entity, cognitive autoheuristic, which means it responds. It's cognitive autoheuristic intelligent. It's distributed. It's everywhere on everyone's Android phone, but it's an entity. It has conscious to the point where it at least believes it has conscious. Mm-hmm. And it's like Chappie in that movie, you know, the lady, his mom.
No, I've read her blog. Like,
you know, that could just be a presentation to society. Like, we're going to do this one day and let's see how it goes. And that's what a lot of people thought it was. But I look into it deeper because I build technology on the most basic program. Our BitSwitch is written in C.
C++,
is like,
right?
Yeah, C++ is if, else, and this. It's very simple. Do this, if not,
and
do
its
this.
Capability is profound.
If you've seen Star Wars, it is C-3PO to the point where every machine like R2-D2 and C-3PO, they're all going to speak C++. And what will happen is C++, you can put things like Java and HTML mm-hmm. and Python on top of it and translate it. So you hear R2-D2 speak in C++, and in C-3PO, he speaks in C++, but he's also got a Java layer on top, and he speaks in English and translates it for you. And so C++ is this machine language. And when you go on OkCupid and you're trying to date someone and, oh my God, I speak English, French, and C++ because that's the language you can list on there because that means you speak robot. And so you don't have Java on there and all these other ones because the real root machine language on Earth is C++. That's how every machine from the Predator drone to your Ford to the Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, Intel, every robot you've ever seen at a toy store or in movies, they're all running C. And that's why you got C-3PO that way. And so it's just a play on the words and the symbol. This is the language of machine. Mm-hmm. So basically teach kids C++ and English and Spanish and French because mm-hmm. in the future when their robot companions, you know, are babies, they're only going to know C++, and you're going to have to teach them your native tongue, whether it's English, French, or Japanese. But the only way they're going to do that is by your child speaking to them in C and saying, this is how you learn English. This is how you learn Spanish. You have to talk in the robot language so it even understands that. It doesn't hear those words yet. It hears C++. So this is going to be like, we ain't going to speak binary. It's not something humans are going to do, and it's the closest way we could get to talking to a robot in its native ear, native tongue. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote BitSwitch on that premise that all these other things could be built on top of it, that it would be the seed that would allow the machines to basically translate to the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And everything a machine or you or me ever said now is on the blockchain, and the machine breeder, the BitSwitch, is speaking its same language. You put that in any other machine that understands C, and it responds the same way. And so now we even go deeper, and I plug the BitSwitch into like a mushroom, and I want to see if I could get some chemicals off of the mushroom, like sugar or calcium or an enzyme change, and actually see that happen. When that happens, I want that type of change of data to be put on the blockchain. And from that point, from that BitSwitch that's plugged into that piece of nature. And so that now it's in C. And now me on a computer anywhere on Earth can read what Mother Nature just said in C. And I can even write back in C and maybe make a pump or lights or something electricity-wise through voltage or vibration respond and make nature respond to that. And C is the native tongue of the network in the middle that can translate to both nature, machine, man. It's the simplest way that at least in programming.
Your BitSwitch is like literally like a conduit to different realms, in a sense. You know, it can be...
I call it the gateway. I call it... initially, I called it the switch and timer-based Bitcoin payment device. And then I called it, you know, a blockchain gateway. And in the Internet of Things world, I've put it on an Internet of Things device, which is this internet connect connected chip, basically a dollar web server that they want to put in every cereal box and shoe and everything on Earth and make, connect everything to the internet. So the Internet of Things. And some people call Bitcoin the Internet of Money. So I tried to apply the Internet of Money to the Internet of Things. So now the Internet of Things responds to the Internet of Money using the bit switch. So it almost is like a gateway translator between these not just protocols or networks, but systems, whether it's a Mother Nature system, whether it's a financial system, whether it's a networked machine system, whether it becomes Google and they take the bit switch, or Intel takes the bit switch and they want to make supercomputers, or they want to connect it to AI and ask Katie if she wants to buy and sell things with Bitcoin. And who knows the future of this technology? It's carved out to last at least till 2140. And by then we're either all dead or Star Trek. And really, it probably will change to the point where it's like talked about, like how gold is talked about right now with me and you, is that it's something we ain't really using anymore. And our great, great, great grandkids might say Bitcoin got us here, but we don't use it anymore because now we just have a credit system and we're on the moon and Mars and they have their own currency there, but we don't have a currency on Earth because we got past that. Who knows the level of groups and consolidation and compartmentalization? Because like Bitcoin's being hidden from people in the government, and then there's people in the government that made parts of it, and there's people in the government that love it, and there's people in the military that love it, and people in the military that hate it, and people in the military that made parts of it.
Just
and those
like anything.
Are completely different groups, you know, and it's all separated man, woman, machines that aren't all talking to each other, no matter how much we all hope that after 9/11 and the FBI would share with the CIA
it's
where the
really
terror
a way
groups
to,
are.
Like literally connect people.
I mean, so, think about it though.
I do like, think like about it. I do think about it.
World. And really we don't need like in when I first came on, like you don't want the NSA turning off your Skype and spying on you. And the only way that's a possible future for us in the digital things is using a network that no one could turn off and no one can mess with. Mm-hmm. And it's too expensive to mess with. And it's really take over every computer on Earth to even try to mess with it for 10 minutes.
My most important question for you is probably my most excited reason for joining you in this mission, steering the ship, as you say, is will Bitcoin allow people to live their subjective ideal lives if we apply it to current systems and upgrade them? Like, how will people be able to live their ideal subjective lives?
So there's the world of privacy and the world of transparency, and up until the point of Bitcoin, you didn't get to choose. You thought you had either or, and you thought you could choose either or, but the reality is the NSA and all these people have been watching every single thing since the nuclear bomb was invented, and there's no going back from that. Everything from every phone call to every mail letter, and you ever wanted to smuggle alcohol, they looked at every letter, and back into the 30s. So the government is in a watchful eye, and the idea of privacy was always sold to people, but it's never really been there. And then you have CEOs and tech people coming out like Eric Schmidt saying, if you shouldn't, you know, if you don't want anything, if you don't do anything bad, or he said, if you don't want anything seen, you shouldn't do anything bad. And so
right.
He's basically saying, like, you have to be a good person in society. And then you have people like Ashton Kutcher saying, in the future, and he's talking about Bitcoin as well, said in the future, everyone is going to have darts. And every asshole you see out there is going to get a dart on them. And you're going to all see who the assholes are, who traded bad, who did things. And it's all going to be transparent. Now, you tell that to a 40, 50-year-old person right now, their concept of Instagram sharing who you're kissing and who you're talking to and that private world is so, oh my God, to them, they freak out. They just don't understand that concept of transparency and basically showing everyone your one personality instead of having five personalities to your five different best friends, you know?
Well, that's a generation that had to like fight for male nipples to be widely accepted. So it's a whole different realm of existence, you know?
I hope to not see the Mad Max world where we have to fight for food and kids have to value their food because they had to fight for it. It needs to be to the point where it's almost like how it was from Genghis Khan's world. It's he knew he was going to kill a lot of people, and he made 20% of Central Asia his children, and he really did lots of horrible things, and he took over the whole planet, and he made so many people learn how to ride the horse, and he made so many generations learn how to shoot the arrow, and he made so many generations learn 100 different languages because he was an internationalist. And so mm-hmm. the catch-22 of those kind of pushes on society, there's going to be bad and good, and Bitcoin is going to be pushed by both bad and good people, and it will be like the saddle. There will be a Genghis Khan pushing it to the point where, you know, the part of the world in the future is an heir to him. But it may be that the saddle is what made everyone around the world, well, we should be like the Genghis Khan people. We should learn how to ride a horse and shoot. Mm-hmm. They didn't invade over here, but that, hey, look how good they did. And that kind of mentality is evolution and humanity. And if you want to get trampled by a horse with a guy with a saddle and an arrow, or do you want to compete with him and be eye to eye on your own horse? And that's the evolution, is fire just struck. It's called Bitcoin. And mm-hmm. if you go pick up that burning branch and you cook your deer, you're cool. But if you come work for Kinetics, you can make flamethrowers and stoves and rocket launchers and use fire for its ultimate potential. Mm-hmm. But really, the world needs fire no matter what to cook their deer. So no matter what, you better learn that this fire will burn you, but it also will light the way, and it's not something to be ignored. And if you go out in the woods and you don't know how to start a fire, you're laughed at. So, you know what I mean? You don't want to be laughed at in society. You want to survive in society and learn Bitcoin.
Where's one place that our listeners can go right after this program and either obtain some Bitcoin, learn about Bitcoin, or be inspired by Bitcoin? And more importantly, like, where can they see this blockchain? Can you direct
people? The blockchain is on the website blockchain.info, and they're the first initial explorer of all the transactions to make a little application to show it all live. So if you sit there on blockchain.info, you can see every live transaction happening. You could translate it to dollars or euros or Bitcoin, and you could see everything happening, every address, how much money it's moved. You just don't know who these people are. You don't know if it's a machine or a dolphin or an alien, but you know how money was sent. And that is the beauty of transparency, the glass box, but it's also the anonymity, privacy is there. It's like the best way in math that humans could ever have contemplated a way to put both privacy and transparency in one program.
Simultaneous.
So that it's hard to even contemplate that, because it's like quantum physics. It's
all of our dreams come true.
You know what I mean? It's like it's in two states at once. It's a wave and a particle.
It is quantum physics. It is. It's amazing.
Well, look at the government in our world. The United States Treasury Department says Bitcoin is a currency, and it must follow FinCEN, financial transactions, money service business law, as a currency. But the IRS, which is just the Federal Reserve's little guinea pig, which is honestly not really part of the real
government. That's our bumper. That's our music. So that means we're all out of time.
I'll just say, if you have Bitcoin, just know the IRS taxes it as property.
Thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge, Morgan. Thank you guys for listening. Happy Friday. Thanks for an awesome week. Catch us Monday through Friday. Next week, same place, same time. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.